Hi there. I'm so excited to welcome you to the Arthritis Life podcast, where we share arthritis life stories and tips for thriving with autoimmune arthritis. My name is Cheryl Crow, and I am passionate about helping people navigate real life with arthritis beyond joint pain. I've been living with rheumatoid arthritis for 20 years, and I'm also a mom, occupational therapist, video creator, support group leader, and I created the Room to Thrive self-management program. I am so excited to help you live a more empowered life with arthritis. We're going to cover everything from kitchen life hacks to navigating the healthcare system to coping with friends who just don't get it. Seriously, no topic is going to be off limits on this podcast. My interviewees and I share our honest stories of how chronic illness affects our lives. This includes discussions about mental health, sex, shame, pregnancy, body image, advocacy, self-acceptance, and so much more. You'll hear stories from all ends of the spectrum, from a person who's living in Medicaid remission from psoriatic arthritis to somebody living with severe mobility restrictions and severe pain from rheumatoid arthritis. You'll hear how people manage their conditions in different ways, like medications, mindfulness, movement, social support, work accommodations, and so much more. You'll also hear from rheumatology experts who just get it. We'll dive deep into the science behind chronic pain and what's the latest evidence for lifestyle changes that can help you thrive with arthritis, including exercise, sleep, nutrition, stress reduction, and more. This is your chance to sit down and chat with a friend who's been there. Ready to figure out how to manage your arthritis life? Let's get started. Hi there. Before we start this episode, number 119, I have a really important trigger warning. This episode includes a discussion about emotional abuse, sexual assault, rape, and abortion between minutes 29 and 34. So if these topics are triggering for you or you'd like to avoid them for any reason, feel free to skip ahead again between minute 29 and minute 34. Thanks so much. All right. Today I have Christine Toriano here to talk about her life story of living with rheumatoid arthritis. So, I already gave it away, but can you introduce yourself by sharing, you know, where you live and what is your relationship to arthritis?
So my name is Christine Toriano and I live in Sacramento, California. And my relationship with arthritis is just good and bad. It, you know, some days are good, some days are not so good. I was really actually, I've had arthritis for 32 years. So in the beginning, I had a lot of swelling and inflammation, and my relationship with arthritis was really bad because I was always in pain. But now, so many years later, it's more just kind of something that might slow me down, but I think about it every day, but it doesn't affect me as it used to. So it's just there. Yeah. And I try and make the best of it.
Yeah, that's a really great way of thinking about it. I was almost thinking about it as the analogy of like background noise, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like it's there, but it's not predominant. You could still focus on other things. And yeah, I mean, it's really, I'm grateful to have you on the podcast to share, you know, 30 years of experience. That's just a long time. I'm sure you've learned so many things over those years. And I'm just celebrating my 20-year anniversary of being diagnosed as well. But, you know, I'd love to start off with hearing your diagnosis story or quote unquote saga. Like what were you feeling that led you to kind of go to the doctor, and like, what did that feel like to actually get that diagnosis at that age?
Oh boy. I was 21, 1991.
Same as me.
Yeah. Oh man. I was 21 in the middle of college life and partying and, you know, just being social and working. I worked in retail. And so I was on my feet a lot in retail. You know, I worked in department stores and I worked at places like Bed Bath & Beyond and things. And I did that since I was 18. From 18 to 28. And when I was working at one of my last places I worked was Bed Bath & Beyond. And I was at that time, I was also in an aerobics class at the JC down in San Diego. I was going to a JC down there, and my feet started to hurt. So I was 21. I was 20, I guess, beginning of year 21. My feet started to hurt. I was wearing, you know, LA Gear high tops, doing a summer aerobics class, you know, trying to get my credits and everything so I could transfer. And my feet started to hurt and I couldn't do the exercises and I didn't know what it was. And then I'd go to work and be on my feet all day. And I, you know, working retail, helping people, stocking and all that. And I thought, well, maybe it's, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought maybe it's the air filtration in the system and whatever, because people were telling me all kinds of things and I didn't know what to believe. So I finally went to the doctor and my GP immediately sent me over to a rheumatologist. He's like, I think you have rheumatoid arthritis. And I'm like, okay. And I went to the rheumatologist and he's like, right away, he's like, oh, you know what? Before I went there, I went to a podiatrist. And the podiatrist wrapped my feet in ace bandages and so tight, and they were inflamed, you know, because it was arthritis, right? It started in my feet that I had to rip those things off so fast. I mean, it was like, it hurt so bad. It was like putting a burn into the fire and just,
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It was awful. So then I went to my doctor and he referred me to the rheumatologist, and the rheumatologist then listened a bit to my story and put me on a high dose of aspirin. He's like, just take all this aspirin, you know, 5 times a day.
And now this is the 90s, right? So before methotrexate and the biologics, is that
yes,
right?
Yes. Yes. And he, so I took like, I don't know how much aspirin, but I took it for like 2 days and my stomach was just in knots and it was really upset. And I'm like, I can't do this. So he immediately put me on methotrexate.
Okay. So yeah, cause I remember that. Yeah. Methotrexate came out first and then the biologics.
Methotrexate and naproxen.
Okay.
And I could take naproxen for a long time before it started affecting me. And then I was switched to Celebrex. But when I was on naproxen and methotrexate for years, but I didn't have real good health insurance. So I couldn't always afford the medication. So I had lapses in taking it. But
is it naproxen? Or now,
yeah.
Oh, naproxen. Okay, sorry. I just want to make sure I understood. Yeah, understood. Yeah. That's like a pain an NSAID, I believe, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory.
Yes, and and you know what? Before that, so I can't think right now. Before that,
I don't remember. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. So I also was on gold shots. So I started gold shots. I don't know if you've ever heard of those, but
yes, I have. That used to be one of my great aunt had and rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah. And I would have gold shots once a week in my hip. And that lasted for about a year and a half. It took a while to start working, but once it started working, oh my gosh, it was like, I could get up in the morning and not have 2 hours of pain before it started working. And then, but it would kind of wear off at night. And so by the time I felt good, you know, in the evening, by the morning, I had to start all over again.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just like, I was so frustrated, you know? So, but I did gold for about a year and a half and then I, went to the methotrexate.
Okay.
Naproxen. Naproxen.
Yeah. No, maybe I'm saying it. I don't know.
I don't know.
I've heard it pronounced naproxen, but it could just be in my little circle. And you know, you mentioned that it was frustrating. I mean, I think it is, I'm trying to imagine what that conversation was like when you got diagnosed. Like, did they explain that this is like a lifelong thing, or like, I don't think I completely understood that it was chronic when I got diagnosed. That could be my own listening skills.
Yeah. But well, yeah, you know, I didn't think about it that either. I'm like, okay, I have arthritis, you know, what can I do? And I did the gold, then I did the methotrexate, but it started in my feet, and you know, it always happens in both sides, right? On both sides at the same time. So it started in my feet, and within a few months, it went into my hands. And then within a year, it was in my whole body. You know, it had traveled all the way around. And so I just remember calling, I was in San Diego going to school, college. And I just remember calling home going, you know, just screaming because in the middle of the night, because my shoulders hurt or because I would just have these just painful spurts, painful moments in the middle of the night and just unbelievable pain that I just couldn't get through. And I was all alone, you know, going to college and everything. So yeah, if I would have known it was going to be forever, but you know, you learn to live with it, and I've learned to live with it. And, but I've also, you know, I've been on meds pretty much my whole life. I was born with epilepsy.
Okay.
And so I was on Dilantin and phenobarbital until I was 11 or 12. Okay. And then I had 10 good years and got arthritis.
Yeah.
So I've been on meds kind of all my life, and I get tired of taking them.
Yeah.
You know, so I've quit cold turkey.
Okay.
And because I'm just sick of them. And then the pain starts coming back real hard, real fast. Wow. Hard and fast, and I have to take twice as much to feel better again. You know, that whole roller coaster, that cycle of stuff. So
it is really, you know, I've had a lot of discussions with people about whether or the, you can't, it's apples and oranges, but the experience of having a chronic condition since you were young, like where you don't know any other life versus getting diagnosed older. And there's like kind of benefits and drawbacks to each, but I imagine, I don't know what it's like to live with epilepsy, but you kind of already had a framework in mind that like bodies don't always work. Whereas like for me, it was like, well, I take care of myself, so I'll always be feeling healthy until I'm like quote unquote old, you know, but that's kind of operating under a faulty assumption. But in your case, I mean, it is different. Obviously epilepsy is different than rheumatoid arthritis. But I wonder if part of you had a little bit of like, do you think you maybe developed some skills around just being a patient, like in the healthcare system and managing meds and stuff like that, maybe that helped?
Oh yeah. I knew how to take pills. I knew how to, you know, be on a routine and, you know, take pills three times a day or, you know, whatever I needed to. But I also knew how to stand up to my doctor, and I knew how to, I was kind of rebellious. I think because I had, I didn't want to admit that I had RA, and I didn't want to abide by these rules and take the meds and everything. And then I was frustrated that I didn't always have insurance, so I couldn't take the methotrexate as I needed to. I couldn't afford it. And my doctor wanted to put me on prednisone, and I call it pred, but I took prednisone for a while, but that was still when I was working in retail at Bed Bath & Beyond. And all of a sudden I noticed the moon face, and I felt weird, you know, just kind of cloudy and foggy and things. And then I was reading about it, and I'm like, I'm not taking this stuff. And so I never told my doctor, but he would keep giving me refills, and I just wouldn't get them filled. I just quit prednisone because I didn't want the side effects. And I'm glad I did, because I mean, I'm not endorsing quitting because I'm not endorsing any of that, but I'm just saying for me, it wasn't right for me. And that's when if I ever have to get a new doctor, it's like, that's my one requirement, is like, I'm not taking prednisone because I just refuse.
Yeah. And I, like, you know, for the record, definitely do not advise anyone going off meds without telling their doctor, you know, just for your own best interest. I mean, there is a medical disclaimer on all of my podcasts that like, none of this should be taken as medical advice. It's our personal story, but this is a learning moment, because it is really common for people to do that. Like, and it's simultaneously true that like you should inform your doctor and obviously have a conversation with them about it so that they can maybe suggest alternatives. What they're trying to do with prednisone is get the inflammation down and give you the best chance long-term at controlling your disease. But if the side effects are so severe. For a lot of people, they are. For me, I already have anxiety. And if I go on prednisone, I'm able to tolerate small doses, but it really triggers my anxiety. And I'm more prone to having panic attacks during that time. I just have to like mentally prepare myself for that, you know? And so, yeah, it's up to, you know, you at the end of the day are the one that gets to make the medical decisions about what's happening to your body, you know? Yeah. And if you don't want to put prednisone in your body, that's totally a valid conversation to have with your provider.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I've gone off, you know, on my own, and I know that's not right. And I've tried, but I've always been a little rebellious, you know, and it's like, and I've been, and that's one of the things too, being on meds so long, it's like, I've kind of learned what my body can and cannot take. And I know, I'm no doctor, but it's like, I play with it a little bit more than I should, you know, and I test it, you know, and it's like, oh, can I take a lesser dose? Can I, you know, can I skip a day? Can I do this and that? And usually it's not right, but I just, you know, usually bottom line, you should listen to your doctor, you know, but
yeah, I mean, it's and everyone at the end of the day is, you know, you are in charge of your own, you know, health-related decision-making. And there's this phrase in rheumatology now called shared decision-making, which is supposed to be the best practice for rheumatoid arthritis. And that just means, I mean, it's so simple. It's like, why do we even have this name for it? Like, why is, why is this not already just the standard? Because it just makes sense. But it just means simply having very clear conversations between the doctor and the patient about, like, that are two-way, not like I'm in charge and you're not, but both having equal weight in the conversation, saying, okay, look, this is what's important to me. This is what my body feels like on this or that medicine.
If you have ever felt completely lost or utterly alone while trying to navigate real life with rheumatic disease, listen up. I am here for you. I created an educational program to help you go from overwhelmed to confident, supported, and connected in a matter of weeks. And it's called Room to Thrive. After earning a master's in occupational therapy and completing hundreds of hours of additional training, I created a step-by-step guide to help you truly thrive with rheumatic disease. This is the only program I know of that's designed to improve quality of life for people living with inflammatory, autoimmune forms of arthritis, like rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, ankylosing spondylitis, non-radiographic axial spondyloarthritis, Sjogren's disease, and more. During the self-paced lessons, you'll learn how to manage pain and fatigue, cope with stress, navigate relationships, and continue doing the things that matter to you and bring you joy. The goal is really to help you improve your quality of life and learn how to thrive with your rheumatic disease right now, rather than waiting for a distant day when it might be cured or healed. I really created the down-to-earth, practical, heartfelt resource I wish I had had when I was first diagnosed at age 20. If you want even more in-depth support, you can join the 12-week Room to Thrive virtual support group, where you'll be surrounded by people who actually get what you're going through, people who will provide the encouragement, validation, and support that you deserve. Each group is expertly moderated, so you don't have to worry about the kind of misinformation that spreads like wildfire in the free-for-all social media groups. If you're on the fence, don't just take my word for it. Here's what Katie had to say in March 2023. I was lost and overwhelmed with my RA diagnosis. It felt overwhelming to know what to read, what to do, how to spend my energy trying to research on the internet. Room to Thrive did that for me. It's been like getting a crash course in my diagnosis along with a community who gets it. To see all the details, including the dates for the next support groups, go to the link in the show notes or bit.ly/thriveroom with a capital T and capital R. You can also just email me anytime at info@myarthritislife.net. And don't delay if you're interested, because each group is capped at 16 people or less in order to make a small, intimate group atmosphere. Thanks so much for your time, and I can't wait to get started with the next groups. And I can't wait for those of you who are interested in the self-paced option to go ahead and join that at any time. Bye-bye for now.
And I think having that openness and that conversation is so important. I remember telling my doctor once, you know, I said, well, the amount of pain and stiffness I have right now, I had been on a certain biologic for a number of years, but then I had a baby
And my body changed a lot after that. And I was worse. Things were worse, but I kept being, it was very confusing because I kept being like, well, is this just the temporary, my body's adjusting to postpartum? Is it about to get better? I don't want to make any rash decisions. And I said, the amount of pain I'm in is not intolerable. Like, it's tolerable, but it's noticeable. And I said, if it's just this amount of pain, that's fine. But I don't know what the pros and cons are of making a, you know, change in my medicine. And she was like, the thing is, we don't want you to be in as much pain as you are right now, because that means that you're on this downhill trajectory. And the further you get down, the harder it is to get, she's like, it's a fire. Like, your house is on fire. You want to start putting the hose on it when it's just one room, not wait till it's five rooms, you know?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have been able to make that decision without having that information from her, and vice versa. She can't make decisions without knowing what's important to me, you know? So sorry, that's my story.
Well, no, totally. That's right. That's right. And I actually left that doctor because I was afraid of him. And he was my first RA doctor, and he was just this big military type, you know, that just was intimidating and stuff. And I was 21 and just in pain, and I needed things, and I wasn't taking the prednisone, and I needed like free samples of, because he was giving me free samples of methotrexate for a while. But he couldn't always, you know? And so I came in one day and I'm like, you know, I need something because I don't have insurance right now. And he's like, I'm sorry, I don't have it. And so I think at that time I left him, and I've been to so many, I tried so many different doctors in San Diego just to see who I was a good fit with. And, you know, even meeting him in their office, it was like, I could tell right away if we were going to fit or not. And then I got one doctor who I started buying, like, well, I started getting into the natural stuff, right? The anti-inflammatory diet and supplements and things. And he just called it all quack. And this was probably in the later 90s. And so I left him because he didn't believe we weren't on the same page, you know?
Right.
And so I always have to advocate for myself, and it's like, no one else is going to do it for me. And I know on a certain level, what's best for my body. I've realized I'm very sensitive to medicines and, I'm sensitive to a lot of things. And, I had a boyfriend who was in 2000, we were together a couple of years, and he had a best friend that worked at a Whole Foods or a vitamin shop thing. And he just believed in this guy so much. And it was at the time when the blood type diet was out, and his friend was following the blood type diet. And he thought that his friend thought that my arthritis, I got arthritis because I'm taking the pill, the birth control pill.
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
Yeah. So my boyfriend's name was Jeff. His friend at the store's name, his name was Dale. And Dale just thought that my arthritis was caused by taking the pill. And we know it wasn't. But, you know, at this point, both of us spent hundreds of dollars on like 30 different supplements that I was taking, that I ended up taking twice a day.
Wow.
When I was with him. And I stopped my meds, and my doctor didn't know it at the time. And this was a good doctor that I trusted, that we fit very well together. And he's like, when I came into my next appointment, he's like, why did you stop taking, I was taking Enbrel at the time. Oh. And he's like, why are you not taking the Enbrel? I'm like, because, you know, my boyfriend, his friend, and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you bring your boyfriend in here and I will talk to him. And, you know, I will tell him that you need to take your meds, you know, that you need this stuff. It wasn't that I didn't want to, but my boyfriend didn't want me to, because he thought Dale knew everything. And so I started, he never went in. They never talked. They didn't know each other. But I ended up hiding my Enbrel injections in the fridge, right? Because they have to be refrigerated. Mm. And I ended up hiding the injections in the crisper, like under all the food and everything. And I would sneak the shots twice a week because I didn't want Jeff to know, my boyfriend, but I needed them because I was in pain. Because the 30 supplements twice a day at $400 a month was not helping. It was helping a little bit, but not significantly.
No, and I've talked about this a lot on social media. I want to do a whole podcast about it, about this very fascinating natural is better bias. Like, it's a very strong cognitive bias that can lead people to such detrimental decision-making around their inflammatory arthritis, because it's seen as, well, natural methods don't have any negative side effects, so the medicines do. But if the natural doesn't work, you can, and you suffer the joint pain that you, or the joint deformities that can occur if your disease is uncontrolled, you cannot turn the clock back on.
Right.
Those, as I know you know. Yes. So I'm not lecturing you, I'm lecturing anyone listening. It's not a one, people seem to look at them as like, first of all, they're not either or. You can do natural methods alongside medications if that's what feels right to you. But and right now in 2023, there is so much data over and over and over again about the efficacy and safety at the population level of these medications, and the lifestyle methods that are most likely to turn the dial on your inflammation. It are not the nutrition or supplements, it's exercise. And that's, again, not to say that any one individual might be better served in their own body doing diet and supplements, but then exercise in, you know, randomized control trials, when they try all these different things, it's over and over again, it's consistent engagement and movement. It doesn't have to be going to the gym. It can be dance, which I know that you like. And I'm going to put the link to the 2022 Integrative Health Guidelines for the Management of Rheumatoid Arthritis, because it's the first time a national association in the United States for rheumatology, put out integrative health guidelines. So therefore, specific for, they say in the title of the document, it's for guidelines for exercise, rehabilitation, diet, and additional integrative interventions. And they have a chart, and it's like, you know, they're actually against any formally, and this is based on 500 pages of research that's not biased research. This is not like drug company funded things. So these are, you know, real studies, and formally defined, against any formally defined diet other than Mediterranean, and against dietary supplements specifically for rheumatoid arthritis, also against chiropractic. So these things that seem so the harmless can do a lot of harm, especially because you are deciding not to take the medicine. You're risking your disease going uncontrolled. Sorry, that's my little soapbox. I almost said spoonbox. Soapbox.
It's true. I was told at one point when I had stopped taking meds that, because I was just rebelling and I was done, they're like, the doctor said, you know, anytime you're in pain, your disease is getting worse, right? So it's like, I don't over-medicate. I'm no way. I take it the least amount possible to feel good and to keep my body from going further downhill than it has already, over the 30 some years. But I was told by a doctor a long time ago, it's like, if you're in pain, then that's when you're getting worse, you know, so you need to keep your meds at least level to your pain level so that deformity doesn't happen, or you can keep your well-being as long as possible.
Yeah. And I think the only, you know, everything becomes a gray area the further you get down in rheumatology. And the one only caveat I would say to that with current pain science is that if the pain is from central sensitization, then that central sensitization is when your brain is overly responding to a small stimulus, so that you perceive there is a chronic degree of pain in a certain area of your body, but it's not actually due to an ongoing disease process like rheumatoid arthritis. You could have, you know, with you have rheumatoid arthritis, you can have some of your pain being from the disease itself,
in that actual inflammation that you have to control. But some of your pain could be in that chronic category. It's a little bit more similar to like fibromyalgia, where you then have to retrain your brain that actually movement and moving this area of my body that my brain is telling me is in pain can actually help retrain my brain that it's, there is no active stimulus hurting me at the moment. It's very, it, that's where it gets really tricky, is like how much of your pain is chronic versus actually from your disease. And yeah, don't have the best language around this, because you're like, chronic pain is different than saying I have a chronic illness like rheumatoid arthritis that is causing pain. You know, chronic pain is usually like, the example they give is like, you have an accident. Like I had a car accident. I had whiplash injury to my neck. My neck still hurts 6 years later, but the tissues, all objective signs are that there's nothing there. It's my brain has become overly sensitive to that part of my body, because it's like high alert. This area got hurt, protected at all costs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
But yeah, the goal is obviously to get your pain as low as you can, so you can, like you said, have, you know, the best quality of life possible to you. And so, I mean, I'm grateful to you for sharing the story about the boyfriends and the boyfriend's friend who pressured you, because it's so often the ones closest to people that pressure them to, you know, do the natural is better, or, you know, have like conspiracy theories around big pharma, quote unquote, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Can I pause for a second?
Oh yeah, no problem. Okay. So yeah, and I think like I was kind of, I'm trying to form my thought here, but you know, as a young person, there can be so many pressures on you from, especially from your dating life and relationships. I remember, I'll just share really quickly. One time I was dating somebody who I was telling them I have to be really careful about infections. And it is all infections. I'm on Enbrel and methotrexate, and I have to be careful about getting an STD or getting, I didn't want to get any infection. So I was really careful about, you know, sexual, you know, protections and stuff like that. And he was like, he was not that, you know, excited about wearing a condom and stuff. But I'm like, well, you have a choice. You could not be sexually active with me and not wear a condom, or you can wear a condom. Like I had to be able to advocate for myself. And I know that that's something a lot of young people go through. What were your relationships, you know, what is anything you'd want to share from your relationships, you know, as a young person with rheumatoid arthritis?
Hi there. This is Cheryl chiming in really quickly. If you missed it earlier, I just wanted to remind you there's a trigger warning for the next 5 minutes of this episode between minute 29 and 34 for discussion of sexual assault, emotional abuse, rape, and abortion. So if you'd like to avoid a discussion about these issues, feel free to skip ahead to minute 34. Thanks so much.
Yeah, well, with arthritis, I dated a little bit, but I wasn't a serial date or anything. I didn't always have to have someone. And so I was raped at 18. So I really wasn't into dating much, you know? And, so
I'm so sorry to hear that. That's so, so sad. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I've worked through it, but when a special guy did come around, you know, I was nervous. I was nervous because of my past and with the arthritis and everything. And then, so I didn't date a lot, but then, when I met Jeff in 2000, we did the whole vitamin thing and me hiding the meds and everything. You know, he didn't want me on birth control, so I wasn't on anything. And we decided to do like the rhythm method and things and try to do it naturally and all that. And that's difficult, at least for me. I found that very difficult to do. And so I got pregnant after 4 months of being in a relationship with him. And I was with him 2 years. I was pregnant 3 times by him, and I had 3 abortions in that relationship because,
wow.
Yeah, not that, I mean, I'm pro-choice, but I never thought of it before until all that, you know, because it happened to me. I didn't really have to think about things like that. And, but the first time was, he blamed me and everything, you know, because he thought that I did this on purpose and everything. And I know, but I knew that I couldn't be pregnant. I couldn't have a surprise pregnancy because with arthritis, you have to plan for things, right? You have to be off your meds and everything. So,
Taxate especially. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, he, you know, went with me and everything the first time. And then the second time I told him and he was upset again, but the third time we were traveling and I ended up in the emergency room at the hospital in Southern California because I was taking so many vitamins. I had an atopical pregnancy and that was dangerous. And the doctor said, you have no business taking 30, 60 pills a day, you know, supplements a day and stuff. So it wasn't exactly a healthy relationship, but yeah. So that's how that ended. But, I'm single. I've never been married. I don't have any kids. I've been a teacher, so I get my kid filled by teaching. Mm-hmm. And I was never one who always wanted kids. So I was okay with not having kids, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Well, that's a lot to go through as a young person. I mean, I'm grateful to you for sharing it. Cause again, anything that you share on this podcast, I can guarantee someone is relating to, you know, or someone feels like, wow, I feel seen, you know? Yeah. And I can, you know, I'm sorry that he wasn't more equipped to be a support person for you at that time. I'm trying to be generous with my assumptions. I try to say, okay. What is it? Attribute positive intent or something. I'm trying to be a good person, but I actually don't like him. No.
No, I know. I would call him emotionally abusive.
Okay.
Actually, well, overall, you can say that too. I don't care.
Okay. And you deserve better.
Yeah.
You. And, you know, and I, you know, I just, it's too bad that these bad things seem to happen to like the nicest people, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned, I also wanted to talk about work because you have had such an interesting work life, because you mentioned loving kids as a teacher, not necessarily mm-hmm. wanting to have your own. And I totally get that. I always wanted kids. Uh-huh. And it is so much harder when you have one than you think before you do, even though my child is perfect. He's amazing. But I'm like, it's absurd to me that people pressure people to have kids, because I'm like, you should not do this unless you really, really, really want to do this.
Yeah.
It's just a lot. But so you are a teacher. Can you tell me a little bit about like what it's been like, you know, being an ESL teacher and traveling and managing your arthritis alongside all that?
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, the arthritis really bothered me because I spent like 10 years in retail in the beginning, and being on my feet, I couldn't do that much anymore. But then I went into teaching. I actually started teaching for my 8th grade English teacher. She was, after I came back to my hometown, and now that I was older, she was now teaching kindergarten and not 8th grade English. And so I taught in her kindergarten class, and that's where I decided that I wanted to teach. And so I started subbing around town and everything. And then I decided I dance, and my dancer friends were traveling and going all over different places, and they work and travel and everything. And I wanted to do that. So I got on an email list and eventually got someone contacted me and said, well, we're ready. We're going to hire in China or South Korea. Where do you want to go? And I was like, South Korea. And because they pay more, and I just felt more comfortable going there and everything. So yeah. I went to, within 4 months, I was off to South Korea teaching English as a second language and to Korean kids that were age 5 to 14 or so. And Yeah. And it was great. I was there 3.5 years and I got to see most of Korea. And I even went close to the DMZ. That was one of the most interesting events, interesting excursions I did. And so we went to the DMZ, which is a place that you can't go on your own. You have to go on a tour. You have to bring your ID, your passport. And we spent the whole day there. And it was just one of the most interesting tours that I went on while I was in Korea. It was very, and it was kind of emotional, but very just heavy to be there and a little bit scary because, you know, North Korea is right there and it's just, it's right there. But it was one of the best things.
Just in case someone doesn't know what DMZ stands for, it's the Korean Demilitarized Zone, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's the peaceful space between North and South Korea.
Yeah. Yeah.
That that people leave, you know, notes for their loved ones. And so many of the stones and the writing on stones there is in Chinese because they originally spoke Chinese in Korea before a man created the Korean language. So I spent 3.5 years there teaching at 3 different schools. And then I decided that each school I went to was located further and further north. And the further you go north, the colder it gets. Mm-hmm. And so I was in Seoul my last year there. And I just decided that winters are too cold.
Yeah.
The wind chill factor is huge and waiting outside for the bus and different. I didn't drive, you know, so I had buses and subways and things to take. But it was too cold in the wintertime. So, and slipping on the ice would have been real dangerous. So with my more fragile body. So I came home and put it all together and I signed up to go. I looked on the map and I found all the tropical places, you know, and I put that into where I wanted to go and Indonesia came up. So Whoa. I decided to go to Indonesia. Indonesia was the first country to come up. So I went there and spent 7 years there.
Wow. Now, how did you manage your medications and all that there in Indonesia and Korea?
Well, in Korea, it was great because I had excellent insurance and I was still taking Enbrel and I could get my Enbrel injections there. Okay. And there was no issue. I think I paid like $100 a month or something as a copay. Mm-hmm. I mean, versus, you know, what it costs now if you had no insurance. Yeah. Right. And, so I was well taken care of there. I had an interpreter at this hospital and everything. So everything was great. Indonesia, they don't have such a system. And they do have Enbrel there, but it would have cost me my whole paycheck per month. Okay, so, yeah. And my insurance only paid like $300 a year. $300 a year. And my medications I was taking. So I had a couple doctors in Indonesia, but you know, I worked and it was, there are times that they were available conflicted with my work schedule. And so I didn't see a doctor very often. And I knew, you know, in Indonesia, you can go into a pharmacy and I could get Celebrex and methotrexate over the counter.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't need a doctor. I knew what I needed to take. So I just every month spent about $200. About $200 a month taking, you know, buying my Enbrel and my methotrexate and Celebrex. And I went to the same pharmacy. So they got to know me and everything. And, it was no big deal, you know? And so it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't too bad not having insurance until my hands started to go funny. You know, my hands, when I first got arthritis, they started drifting very early on. But I swear I could feel them drifting when I was in Korea, like in the shower. It was the weirdest feeling. I could feel them moving. Mm-hmm. And then I just became real aware of them. And then my students were aware of them in my classrooms. And they're like, you know, if I had a new class, you know, they'd be, I said, you know, hi, my name is Christine Troiano and I'm your teacher. And they'd say hi. And then they'd start talking to each other and pointing and look at her fingers, look at her hands, you know, and start laughing at my hands. And so I think that actually I became more self-conscious of my hands just because I was in the classroom and these kids were, you know, they were great kids, but they were just curious, you know, and why are your hands like that? And
what would you tell them?
Oh, sometimes I tell them the truth that I have arthritis. And sometimes I just say, you know, that I'd make up a story, you know, I'm a monster or something. And that, you know, I don't know.
For like the little ones.
For the little guys. But for the teenagers, I would, I'd write, you know, rheumatoid arthritis on the board and then I'd tell them. And so they were actually kind of interested. And So, I mean, once they were surprised, my first day in the classroom was like, you know, why are your hands like that? And what's your religion? Right. Oh, so, because they're all, you know, most of them are Muslim over there in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And when I tell them, they'd be like, oh, because I'm nothing, you know? And so
they're like, wait, what? Yeah.
And they're like, what's an atheist? Oh, and then they'd translate in their own language. Someone would tell them, whoever, you know, spoke English better. And they'd be like, oh. That would take them a minute to have it sink in.
Yeah, I bet. I mean,
totally.
Yeah. And so it's called ulnar drift, the deformity associated with rheumatoid arthritis. You know, it's like the knuckles get big and they drift over to the quote unquote ulnar side, which is the pinky side. Mm-hmm. Was it pretty painful?
Yes, in the beginning and probably up until the last, you know, 5-10 years or so, it was painful because they were swollen and there was inflammation. And anytime I would, you know, there were certain foods that I knew affected me, and that was wheat, gluten, sugar, salt, and dairy. Those are the 5 things that are just my,
it all tastes really good.
I know. So yeah. Oh. Yeah. So I knew as soon as I would eat wheat or gluten, you know, I would just blow up in like 30 minutes, you know?
Wow. That's fast. Yeah.
So
I try gluten-free and sadly it didn't do anything to my arthritis, but it does help my stomach bloating. I used to be very bloated all the time. I thought that was just what my body was, but I knew it was uncomfortable. But when I went gluten-free, it was like my lower GI tract was just like, we're not inflated anymore. We're feeling more comfortable now. So anyway, sorry, that's my story, but it's always, you know, it's worth a try to a lot of people to try some of these eliminations. I've tried dairy too. Definitely dairy causes some GI problems for me, but none of them seem to cause a direct joint symptom for me, but many others for rheumatoid arthritis, they do find like a sugar, dairy, like the ones you listed are like objectively some of the most common. The only other one I say is like fried food or processed food.
Yeah.
Your flare-ups. But sorry, so we're talking about your hands. So you were noticing the knuckles feeling.
Oh, yeah. Right. And they were really big. I have a before and after picture because I've had surgery now. So they were really big. My hands were more like this, you know. Mm-hmm. And so this is 23. In March 22, I had left hand surgery. And they were perfectly straight for like a day, you know, for a while, maybe, you know, a few months, but because I wasn't on the right meds, because I wasn't on any infusion or any, you know,
biologic right? class of medicines, which are like the most targeted.
Right.
And, yeah. Either injection or infusion, except for Xeljanz, which is the one I'm on, which is an oral tablet.
Right. And so because I was doing my own thing and I didn't have any biologics or injectables, I know it's my belief that I caused my arthritis, my hands to do what they're doing. So, so I blame myself a lot and blah, 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 but my, doctor, my surgeon, he did the best he could with the knuckles I have left. And he's like, you know, I'll make them straight, but there's no guarantee that they'll stay straight. So because your arthritis is so aggressive, so active, I've never been in remission. So, yeah. So, I mean, I've had the surgery, but this is how they are today. And, you know, I don't know.
Was it the knuckle joint replacement?
Yeah. Can you see on there?
Okay. I see
the little scar. Yeah. So I have a scar on both of my hands.
Mm-hmm.
It's just right down there.
And, you know, and it's, you mentioned blaming yourself. And I think that, you know, learning from things in the past that you would make different choices today if you had, like, there's one thing to be said for saying, wow, I know more information now and I would make a different choice if I could go back. But also, it's also important to counterbalance that with self-compassion, to be like, you know, I did the best I could with the information I have. And it's very common for people who've, you know, made a certain decision that they in rheumatoid arthritis, where whether it's going all natural without meds or whether it's jumping into too many meds and then being super immunosuppressed and having to have like a liver transplant. I mean, there's just so many things that you could say later, like, oh gosh, I wish I wouldn't have done that. And it's hard, I find it important to be self-compassionate, you know, to myself, because there's definitely like things that I regret as well, you know?
Yeah.
And so all we can do is learn from them, right?
Yeah. And I am doing acupuncture now. Acupuncture has really helped my elbow, because I have my elbow like froze back in 2018. Okay. I was in the grocery store and I had a basket and a little basket and I put it in my arm and all of a sudden my elbow just froze up.
Ooh, yeah.
And my elbow went from being swollen and always hurting to the pain is gone now. The pain left, but now it's just, I can't open things. Right. And it's like, I don't have that. I can't drive. But I haven't driven really since 2010, since I started traveling. So driving me on the road isn't probably a good idea.
Wait, where physically are you right now? You're in Sacramento, you said.
Sacramento. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I know. It's like,
is that a very walkable city?
No, not really.
Oh, okay.
No, but yeah, I know. But, you know, I kind of am glued to my computer and stuff. And, you know, I teach online. I do everything online.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, I would just, if I were to go back, you know, to Indonesia or wherever that doesn't have meds, I'm looking for work right now. And so I want to get back out there in the world and travel. I haven't done that since 21 because of the pandemic and everything else. And the hand surgeries and all that. But I think I've decided that I need to have a job that is based in the US so that I can have good insurance, because that's my number one qualification or standard, you know, that I need to have.
Non-negotiable.
Yep, exactly. I have to have insurance because I have to be able to get my infusion or meds or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. I can't do this again. That has been a huge priority for me as well. And then, you know, when I got married, it was fortunate that I was able to be on my husband's insurance, you know, during a few times when I was in between jobs or, it's unfortunate that your insurance in the United States is tied to either your employment or your spouse, you know, or family. If you're younger,
family.
It can be up to now, like I was on my parents' insurance for a while, but back then I don't think it went all the way up to 20. I think it goes to 25 or 26 now, which is really nice, but I mean, it totally makes sense. It's like, we don't have the luxury as people with rheumatoid arthritis to go with, or if we have a choice in it. I mean, you don't always have a choice, right? Obviously, but it's hard. I mean, if you're somebody who likes to travel and that's part of your values, it's like your values are conflicting, because you're like, I value travel and exploring the world, but I also value having the health insurance that enables my health and function. So these are conflicting, you know, values, but maybe who knows? Yeah, you can get around it by maybe doing like smaller trips.
Yeah. I don't know, but I don't go small. I go big or go home.
Yeah. Kind of thing. No.
Like, So I don't know.
You hooked up with a lifetime supply of meds and maybe you get a, I know at least, I don't know, this is maybe totally not helpful, but when I was in China briefly, I volunteered at a clinic, an occupational therapy and physical therapy clinic. And interestingly, it seemed that the people, and there was the clientele was, the kids were mostly expat kids, like American and British kids. And the company, I don't remember for sure, but I thought that maybe the teachers are actually like US based teachers that have to be, that just are physically in China. So maybe they got paid.
Well, yeah, there are teachers in China who come from all over and they are considered expat teachers. And depending on if you're with the government, then you can put your kids in international schools, or if you're in the military, they go to international schools and things. And yeah, it's amazing. I've never done that, but I've taught some kids online that were in international schools in China. So while I was in Indonesia, I had, I've done a lot of things there, but I worked two jobs, right? I had the classroom teaching, and then I worked online teaching Chinese children, or you know, kids in China. So so I got to experience them, and right when COVID hit, and it was just an amazing time. Yeah, so I was right there, and I was glad that I knew how to work online, because before all the teaching went to online schooling.
You were ahead of the curve.
Totally. But it's hard.
No, I just want to make sure I don't forget to ask you about dancing as well. So like, those are two like amazing things about your life, I would think, is all your experience teaching and all of your experience dancing. How did you get into dancing, and what is the kind of dancing that you do?
Dancing, I do five rhythms dancing, and it's a silent moving meditation. Wow. It was created by Gabrielle Roth in the 60s, and over time she created these maps, these five maps of movement. And it goes from, I'll tell you that later. But I mean, it goes,
for a second too.
It's there's five maps. And and these five maps can apply from everything to work, to family, to death, you know, to life cycle, to partnership, to work, all these different things, you know? And so,
I found it online, I think.
Okay. Gabrielle Roth.
Flow, staccato, chaos,
lyrical, stillness. Yeah.
What's stillness like? I've never experienced that. No, just kidding.
That's a hard one. That's the last one where you're kind of like, you've done flowing, you've done, you know, staccato, you've done chaos, and you've done lyrical. So you're all up and light, and then stillness is coming back down to like kind of not yoga, but kind of just peacefulness to yourself and just like resting and slower movements and more like closure to the dance.
I
found it when actually during my turbulent time with that ex-boyfriend of mine. And a friend of mine had done it. And so I looked the guy up, and I ended up taking the guy who did it in Sacramento also lives in a place called Nevada City, which is like an hour from me. And I went to the free intro at the food co-op and never looked back. And I've been dancing since like 2004 or so, 2000. And so that's why I moved to Nevada City, because he lived up there. I was dancing in Sacramento. I was dancing in Nevada City, and I just fell in love with the tribe, the dance tribe up there. And I loved it in the little small town and stuff. And so I moved to Nevada City for a few years before I moved on again. But and did workshops, met people from all over the world. And we danced on Fridays and Sundays,
and it was
amazing.
It's so funny because I started swing dancing in 2004, and I've traveled a bit. And actually, South Korea was on my list of places to go swing dance, because Lindy Hop, the kind of swinging I do, is really big there.
Yes,
I've just so far only traveled to. I danced in Shanghai actually, but and then all around the U.S. But I did not dance in South Korea yet. But But I dance for me has been really like an important physical release. But it's not as maybe philosophical or what's the word as what this sounds like. Like especially the kind of meditation aspect. I think it's a meditation that I have to be present when I'm dancing, but it's not like I'm not consciously thinking about it as like a moving meditation, you know?
Yeah. It's funny. Cause you know, we could dance in a room with like between 50 to 100 people, you know, on a Sunday, especially. And, you dance either by yourself, you can dance in partnership with one other person, or you dance as a community, you know, and there's no rules, or there are some rules, but most of all, it's, you just like dance like nobody's watching. That's what we say. Dance ugly, you know, and dance like nobody's watching. And you can, you know, just because you're dancing with one person doesn't mean you have to dance with them the whole song. You know, you dance for a second and you move on, you know, whatever feels comfortable. There are times when a song comes on or a person, or you're going through something, you know, that you might cry or laugh or get angry, or it's just a personal experience, very personal. There's no performance. It's not an audience thing. You know, it's just an internal thing. And it's a great tribe. I love them. But I started it and it really helped me with movement, and that kept my joints kind of going, you know, and because it really helped me not be so stiff.
Yes. And there is, now we have the scientific evidence for that like motion is literally lotion for stiff joints, right? Yeah. And like patients are like, yeah, we noticed that.
Yeah. And yeah, it's true. And it's like, it's not just, you know, I used to not go out on the dance floor. We dance barefoot. We dance, you know, there's no drugs. No alcohol, you just bring water or something and a sweater, that you dress in layers, right? And then I used to not feel comfortable enough going out on the dance floor alone and dancing to the warm-up music or something as people arrived. But I got over that and then started loving being like the first one there and having the whole floor to myself and moving around and everything. And it's my thing.
That's so beautiful. Do you think it's helped you like cope with the ups and downs?
Yeah. And because those friends, I mean, yeah, I've got my friends from school or whatever, but those dance friends are just lifers. You know, I mean, we're just people have, I haven't lived in Nevada City since 2008, but I still go back up there to dance and stuff. Cause I'm like an honorary part of the community still, you know, cause I just love them. And, I'll go up there. We used to have rockin' New Year's Eve parties, you know, just from, you know, 12, like, yeah, your dance and stuff, right? It's like from 5 PM to midnight, you know, and everybody brings food and we just do it.
Yeah. So that's how I met my husband, is through the dance community. So there's all so many different, like different subcultures for different dances. I know there's like the salsa dancing community, the swing dancing, the tango, and now there's Zumba. I mean, there's so many different kinds. Yeah.
Ballroom and everything.
Yeah. I forgot ballroom. There's West Coast swing is a totally different thing than East Coast and Lindy Hop. Yeah. Which I do the East Coast Lindy Hop.
I like East Coast. Yeah, I don't West Coast, but I know how to do East Coast. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my favorite. I really like New Orleans style jazz, you know. I was just listening to the Louis, because it's December when we were recording this, and I was listening to the Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald Christmas album. It's so good. Yeah, they're just classic. They don't make them like that anymore.
Well, but, I used to go ahead.
Oh no, please go on. Yeah.
I was just gonna say, my mom worked at, she had a coworker that she worked at a bank, and they both worked at the bank, and her friend retired and she went into teaching dance. And so I took ballroom dance lessons from her. She taught ballroom dance, and that's actually how I met Jeff, through, because his dad was her partner to teach dance. And but so I learned, you know, West Coast, East Coast swing and nightclub two-step and the waltz and all these different dances, you know. And then she would have a dance once a month in our little area and invite all of the students, you know, and we'd dance and everything, and I'd take tickets and stuff. And so
fun.
Yeah. So
when I think, I mean, this is going to be like a meta commentary on this episode already as we're in it. But, you know, I think nowadays people diagnosed in the year 2023 often are not told that, you know, you have to go. We're so lucky to have these meds now because it's no longer inevitable that you're going to have the deformity of the ulnar drift. And it's posed as if ulnar drift and deformities. I have deformities in my toes and I have a very slight ulnar drift, very, very slight. I'm wearing my compression gloves right now, but it's not very noticeable. Like deformities are the worst possible thing that could happen to you, right? A lot of times they act like your life is going to be over if you have a deformity. I don't want to make light of them. Like, obviously they hurt and you can actually, my toe deformities don't hurt that much, but anyway, it's the hammer toes, you know?
I have one that's like kind of broken.
It's mine's just like, I'm just curling up. I'm like a little like caterpillar here.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not to make light of it, but to say that your life is not going to be over if you have a deformity, right? It's kind of what I'm like, you're talking so beautifully about dance that you're able to still do so many things with it. That's to me something that I feel like is very hopeful. That's just something that hopefully people listening can maybe reflect on too.
Yeah. And, you know, I used to dance, we danced barefoot but you can also dance with dance shoes, like Capizio dance shoes or something, but no heels. And, you know, it's just comfortable. And I danced with dance shoes for a long time. And actually I prefer wearing them because
me too.
I have more energy, right, with dance shoes on. But, I had foot surgery. So I've had hand surgery, but my first surgery was foot surgery. And I had all 10 of my toes made look good. And because they didn't look good. And I remember my podiatrist saying, you know, if I wouldn't have known you and just looking at your foot x-rays back when I was 21, 22, when I had this done, no, I was 30. And he's like, I would have thought that you were an 80-year-old person because your feet x-rays look like an 80-year-old. And I had it done in 2000 and 2001.
Wow. The night
my first foot done with Jeff, the night before 9/11, I was sleeping on the couch because I couldn't go upstairs because my feet surgery. So I had just come home from surgery and then I woke up to 9/11, right? A phone call from my sister. So yeah. So, and then I had the other foot done like a year later, but he looked at my x-rays. He's like, if I wouldn't have known who you were, then I'd think your feet, you're like an 80-year-old lady. And that was when I was 30, you know?
Well, and I think it's an interesting comment. I mean, I think there's a knowledge now I'll use an analogy from like the back pain community, like where there's an understanding now that the imaging does not match up with the symptoms, right? Like that some people have back x-rays or imaging that looks horrible and they have no pain. And there's people who have excruciating pain whose back x-ray, you know what I'm saying? Like, so sometimes it also, I mean, in the case of, again, just to be very clear, the goal is to maintain your normal joint range of motion and to prevent deformities through aggressive, you know, treatment. And that's why I take, you know, the full dose of methotrexate and my medications. But it's to assuage your kind of maybe additional worry that like a deformity means that like I will be screaming in agony and won't be able to move at all. That's not the case necessarily. You know, it's deformities are more complex than people would imagine. But that must have felt so weird. I mean, did you feel like he was trying to, what do you think he was trying to get you to think when he said, I would have thought like that, maybe basically to let you know that maybe, was he complimenting you for functioning so well, or was he trying to scare you? I don't know what I'm curious.
Oh, no, he said it in a positive way. You know, I didn't take it wrong. I didn't take it negatively. He's like, you're amazing. You know, I mean, the way you're functioning because your feet look really old, you know?
Okay.
And so now it's been, you know, 23, 22 years. And he said, you know, you might have to have this redone in like 10 years, but I haven't had anything redone. And yeah, they don't look perfect, but they're not as bad as my hands, but you know, I've got a big space here and they overlap here and whatever, but you know, I can wear shoes and I don't wear heels, but I never could wear heels.
I never liked heels, even before I got rheumatoid arthritis. I was not a heel girl. I just did not like, I just,
oh my gosh,
find uncomfortable.
No, I had every
soccer. I abused my feet greatly, but yeah.
Oh yeah. In retail, I had every pair of flats. I had one style of flats I wore in every different color, like red and green and blue and, you know, and then once I got arthritis, I couldn't fit half my foot into the shoes I used to wear.
Yeah.
Because it just, I was like, whoa.
Is to avoid the more severe foot deformities is that you could fit into more shoes easily.
Yeah. But you know, it's like they just swole up.
Mind you, on the airplane, especially, I've been wearing compression socks and that helps a bit, but I've noticed that a lot. I have the giant Hokas, those Hoka sneakers. Have you seen those?
My mom.
Yeah. They're so great. I love that these are in fashion now, like gigantic shoes that look like.
Yeah. Oh, they're totally in fashion. I know. And I have my big tennis shoes and stuff. And actually I have a pair of like Teva sandals, for summer, but my mom laughs at me because I have to put my little pinky toe out of the slip.
Because
it rubs.
So that's so like, funny. So. I know my little pinky toe kind of, it's gone rogue.
Yeah.
It's like, it's actually going the opposite direction that you would think for the ulnar drift on the pinky finger goes out. My pinky toe is going in. It's like, like you were saying, I'm a rebel. It's a rebel. It's not following the pattern, but I just realized for time, I want to make sure to I love the rapid fire questions. So do you have any, and it doesn't have to be like one word. I'm just going to ask a couple questions in succession. Do you have any best words of wisdom for newly diagnosed patients?
Listen to your body and follow your doctor, you know, work together because it's so important for you to listen to your body and do what you feel is right, but also listen to your doctor and work together to find the best treatment solution because I was rebellious and I paid for it with pain and deformation and, you know, deformities and things. So that's what I would say the biggest thing is. And if you have pain, you know, it always usually happens in both hands or both feet to start. Mm-hmm. See someone soon, because the sooner you get in, the better.
Yeah. And you know, you were at a disadvantage versus people diagnosed now in that, you know, all of the medications weren't even available to you when you first got diagnosed. So it was the gold shots and they weren't really that helpful. And it's in a way, it's like you had this experience with like, okay, well, this stuff isn't like it's hard. It would have been hard for you to understand at that time how much these aren't just like different options that are equally effective. Like the biologics and methotrexate are like a gigantic step forward, right? Mm-hmm. But when you're the patient, you don't have access to all that knowledge. Like you don't, you know, anyways, sorry, this is supposed to be your rapid fire, but I'm just trying to accommodate.
But it's true. And like, I have drivers, you know, I have medical transportation that takes me to appointments, and one of them, you know, they start all of them today on Remicade or, you know, on a biologic. And it's like, I had to go through all the other stuff first and then end up there. And so they're much less deformed than I am.
Yeah. Even me getting diagnosed in 2004, three. That's one of the reasons I don't have as strong of the deformities. Deformities for me only started after I had my son, because my body really just freaked out postpartum. Not scaring you, I want to see what happened to you. I was following the recommendations at the time from 2013 and 2014, which already have changed as of now for staying on your medicine during pregnancy. But anyway, do you have a favorite arthritis gadget or tool in your toolbox? It's okay if you don't.
Well, I was trying to think about that. And I would just say most recently, I have that little eye drop squeezer thing. It's like the best thing because my eyes are getting dry and all this. And I have used that. And so because I'm using that, it's easier to use and I can put drops in easily. I use the drops as I should, as directed, instead of, you know, trying to do it. But I would also say an opener, you know, because I have a hard time opening things. One, because my elbow, but just arthritis. And I wouldn't say it's a, it's more of a hack if you can't open things, to use like a fork to pop the bubble, to pop the seal on something and then open it.
My friend was, she doesn't have arthritis, but she is an occupational therapist who specializes in helping people with disabilities. And she was recommending something I had never thought of. It makes so much sense, using like needle nose pliers to get those off, like the orange juice, the top of the orange juice or whatever. I was like, oh, I just usually stabbed it with a knife, you know, like this sounds a lot better.
Or I'd use a knife or a fork and just tap really hard on top, you know, until it pops.
Or
knock it on the ground a little bit, you know, because that works too.
That's so funny. No, other people would tell me to use their teeth. I'm like, ooh, that scares me. I don't want
to. That's scary.
Do you have a favorite book or movie or show that you've been into recently?
I like to watch, we like to watch Found. That's really good on NBC. And that, and we have a is it on Netflix or Apple or something? Lessons in Chemistry.
That book broke my
series.
Heart.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's, I need so to watch it. Though. Oh, Brie Larson is incredible in everything she does.
She was amazing. She is amazing. And I think it just finished, but And what else were we watching? It was the end. I don't know. There's so many. There's so many. But yeah, I'm not a big reader, but I do like the shows.
The shows. Oh, that's great. Do you have a favorite mantra or inspirational saying?
Dance like nobody's watching. And that, you know, that I can do it, right? You can do it. You can do it. And this too shall pass, right? It's like just keep going, keep going.
Just keep swimming.
Keep going, right? Because it's, I've sat around a lot and I've been in my darkness and I'm still kind of in my darkness and I'm trying to get out of my darkness. And I just know if I just make that one move, but it's procrastination and just busyness holds me back. And I just know that it's better on the other side, you know, if I can just get to the other side.
Yeah. That's definitely powerful. Yeah. What does it mean to you to live a good life and thrive with rheumatoid arthritis?
Well,
that's a hard one.
Live a good life. Well, I teach because I travel, or do I travel because I teach to travel.
I
teach to travel. And you know what? Once I'm out there in the world, nothing holds me back. It's like, if I want to get somewhere, I'm going to get somewhere. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to figure out the route, make my connections, you know, do what I need to do, but protect myself, you know, and do it wisely, you know, but I take risks when I'm out in the world and in traveling internationally. You know, here I'm in a little bubble in my mom's house, but out there it's like, I'm just living life, doing my thing and living life.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to share with the listeners before we wrap up?
Oh, that
covered a lot, but
I know. Where do I start? Let's see. You have another hour?
Yeah, no.
just that it's hard. The last 30 some years have been hard for me, but you know, it's kind of strange to be on the other side of it. And knowing that, you know, one doctor actually said I had burner arthritis now, but then the new doctor I went to said, no, you need an infusion. You're not done flaming up. So
what
that's why
burner, I never heard of that. What's that mean?
Burner means that you have no more inflammation. Like it's burned out.
Okay.
It's burned out, but then he wasn't very good. And I found a new doctor who, she's like, no, you need infusion. So I started on Orencia a year ago. And I would just say it's a long road, but, you know, get on something good, talk to your doctor and work out a plan that works for both of you. And then live your life, live your best life. Live your best life. Do what you want to do, you know, as long as you can.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share. I know it's always, you know, even for someone like me who loves to like barf my life story out to the universe constantly, it still takes its emotional labor and its time. And it is emotional, even if you've kind of sorted through this stuff to some degree already. So I really appreciate it. And I'm going to put your links to where people can find you. I know you said you're not like extremely active on social media, but I'm going to put your links that you shared in the show notes, which you can find on the Arthritis Life website, along with the transcript and the video of this conversation if you're just listening on audio. And you have a website that your friend created for you, Truly Raw Stories, which I love that. I appreciate your time, and hopefully, yeah, maybe we'll do a part two because we have so much more to talk about, but we'll sign off for now. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl. Bye. Nice talking to you.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Arthritis Life Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Room to Thrive, an educational program I created from scratch to help you go from overwhelmed to confident, supported, and connected in a matter of weeks. You can go through the pre-recorded course on your own, or you can take the course along with a support group. Learn more at the link in my show notes, or you can always go to www.myarthritislife.net. And if you like this podcast, I would be so honored if you took the time to rate and review it. I also encourage you to share it with anyone you know who might benefit from it. I also wanted to remind you that you can find full transcripts, videos, and detailed show notes with hyperlinks for each episode on my website, www.myarthritislife.net. If you have any ideas for future episodes, or if you want to share your story or wisdom on the podcast, just shoot me an email at info@myarthritislife.net. I can't wait to hear from you.
Bye. Bye.